Hey, Trojan fans, it's time to get into the huddle with the Peristyle Podcast. The Peristyle Podcast is your weekly ticket to USC football and recruiting news. Don't forget, you can download the podcast 24/7 at our website, peristylepodcast.com. And now, here's the host of the Peristyle Podcast, USCFootball.com publisher, Ryan Abraham.
Hello, Trojan fans. Welcome to the Peristyle Podcast on a Thursday. Today, we're going to talk with USCFootball.com's great beat writer and columnist, Dan Weber, about this USC Trojan team getting ready for Penn State. Of course, January 2nd in the Rose Bowl, and we've got to see the Trojans practice again for the first time in a few weeks. We want to talk to Dan about that. If you have any questions for us, email us at podcast@uscfootball.com. Or you can go to our website, peristylepodcast.com, leave a voicemail there, or by calling 641-715-3900, extension 816-646. A lot of ways to get a hold of us. We're on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, Audio Boom, TuneIn Radio, lots of ways to consume the podcast. Hope you can go on there and subscribe, leave some positive feedback. We love all of that. We love to hear from you, and we're glad that you are listening to our little USC football show. So, without further ado, let's bring in Dan Weber. What is up, Dan? How you doing?
Doing good. Doing good. Kind of enjoying getting back out on the field. And I don't know any more than the players who really seem to be having a lot of fun. They're real competitive. They're going fast. They're not having to kind of, juice up the enthusiasm. These guys just really seem to very much, as they have the last, 9 weeks or so of the season, they really enjoy being out there on the practice field. And that's one of the throwback things, I think, that you always remember, from Pete Carroll's time, is how much those guys enjoyed being on the practice field and competing with one another and pushing one another. And seeing that, I think I like what I'm seeing, in the first couple of days of official bowl prep work, that they're doing that.
The bowl prep has been a hot topic, I guess you could say, Dan, people in the Peristyle, talking about it and stuff. We got to see the first couple of days. One was full pads. One was shoulder pads only. What are your overall thoughts on that first day or first couple of days?
Well, I think offensively, there just didn't seem to be, haven't had any break. I mean, that they just seem to, we're not seeing any, guys jumping off sides or getting the calls wrong or guys lining up wrong or whatever. And that's including, all the work that, Jalen Green and Matt Fink are getting with the second group. So that's been a revelation that they just seem to be, ready to go. We're seeing more, redshirt freshmen who are being redshirted working in with the second group. And that's something that we haven't seen as much, during the year. We're seeing Kerry Angeline, a tight end, Vilas Jones, Mavai Malapai, guys like that, and a number of the wide receivers who aren't going to play in the Rose Bowl, but are getting to work because the second offense works against the first defense much of the time. So I think that's kind of good news, is they're able to incorporate them, these good athletes, so that the first team defense sees the best athletes USC has, to put against them. And it's good for the second, the young guys who are now to the point where they can, line up and really compete with that first defense. So from those standpoints, I think they picked up where they left off. And again, that's been the key. I think it was certainly the key to Pete Carroll's success, was you saw teams that were really good. They didn't ever lose in November. They went right through to where they were better by the time they got to the bowl games. And that wasn't something that you saw with a lot of teams. A lot of teams, you got a month off and are just trying to, stay at the level they were when they finished the season, and you're not seeing that, or you didn't see that with Pete's team. And it looks like this team has, a chance to, you want them to be better than you remember them, or better than, say, Penn State sees them on film. And so I think I've been very encouraged. I think the first 2 days have been a very, very positive. I'm glad they came out in full pads on Tuesday. They're going to come out in full pads next Tuesday. I think that sends a message totally different from the message they sent last year when they kind of limped into the Holiday Bowl, you know, with just 7 practices. I know they had the week to get ready for the, you know, conference championship game, which this team did not have. But there was just kind of a message that, you know, we don't have to, or maybe we can't take this too seriously, getting ready for the Holiday Bowl. It's very obvious that's not the message this year. This is a very serious, seriously purposeful kind of a practice. I like that. That's a good thing.
Yeah, it's definitely been some positive developments, I guess you could say. We have a lot of questions, Dan, we wanted to get to. Before we do, I wanted to thank our sponsor. So it's a company, I did this once before, BetDSI. So check it out. So if you love college football, and I don't think you'd be here if you did not, you can get into the action with BetDSI.com. So they have over 20 years in business. They're the top rated and safe site to play. BetDSI.com has great college football special going on right now. So if you sign up today, get $10 free to try the service. And if you use the promo code USC10, so that's USC10. This is for the Peristyle podcast. You get $10 free. There's also 100% bonus on your first deposit. So lots of bowl action coming up right now. So if you want to try to get in there and do some, have some fun wagering with any of that, you can use betdsi.com and use the promo code USC10. So like I said, great customer service. You get fast and easy payment of winnings. There's hundreds of college football games, basketball wagers. They got the UFC, other kind of sports as well. There's live in-game wagering with football, basketball, and other major sporting events. So basically whatever you want, you can bet it on BetDSI. So go to BetDSI.com now. That's BetDSI.com. Use the promo code USC10. Get your free wager, and you can start winning today. I'm really excited for the bowl season, actually, Dan. The trying to pick all the bowl games is always a lot of fun.
Yeah, I was just thinking, going over, I think I was reading a story today about, the Penn, I don't know which media site it was, but on the Big Ten's game, just the Big Ten's game. So they went down the list, and they were, you know, mentioning how the USC, Penn State, easily the most attractive game if you don't count the Ohio State-Clemson playoff game. But as you go through the list, there are every one of those are attractive, interesting games, and some, you know, match up with the Pac-12. But when you look at, you know, we always talk about there are 40, you know, bowl games and isn't that too many, blah, blah. This year, the bowl schedule is pretty interesting. I mean, I was looking, you know, and thinking, wow, I'm, you know, enjoy watching a lot of these games. This is going to be fun. So, I agree with you. I think they got it right this year, you know, with the bowl.
Well, let's jump into these questions, Dan. Tarek had one. He said, what have been your impressions of Matt Fink, and do you see him as a potential USC starter? So he's talking about the true freshman quarterback who's not going to be the backup to Sam Darnold now that Max Brown has left. And we have to say this every time, Dan. Max Brown is no longer on the team. He's looking for a new team. So there's no backup quarterback anymore. It's going to be Jalen Green. So they can save Matt Fink's red shirt. Just to clarify, people ask all the time. So I just want to get that out of the way, Dan.
Yeah, it would have to take a number of things happening before they'd use, you know, Matt Fink's red shirt. And he's the classic guy that really absolutely positively should redshirt. So, you know, where you get that extra year or two or however many you need to see, you know, where are you going to be when you get there. I think he's a mature kid. I think he gets it. He understands it. He probably physically is where he really needs to, you know, get that extra year or two where, you know, he, you know, just develops the, you know, the ability to, you know, to take the shots and develops that kind of arm where you can make those, you know, that deep out throw and some of the things and really get the ball on time for the stop routes and what have you. And I don't think, you know, we have seen that yet. I do think we've seen, though, a guy who going against, you know, for the scout, when he's the scout team quarterback and that, not afraid to make a play, and a competitive kid, and handles himself really well that way. But, you know, the classic, you know, redshirt freshman, he's just physically not there and needs that time to really work on getting there. But, you know, this bowl prep is good for him. I mean, he's really appreciative. He understands what a break this is, because he, you know, is getting many of the second team reps because they want Jalen Green to also be able to prep as a wide receiver. So this has been a good time for Matt. We'll know more by the time we get to the bowl, and then we'll see in the spring, you know, where he is. But I wouldn't want to, you know, like predict at this point where exactly he's going to be. I think a good example of answering a question like that was yesterday. Someone said to Clancy Pendergast, you know, well, now that you've seen Jack Jones and, you know, we know what an athlete he is, and where do you think he'll be, you know, for next year? And Clancy said, well, we'll see. You know, he's got to come and show us what kind of player he is. You know, Clancy wasn't, you know, for example, giving him anything at this point, saying he's got to, you know, show that he can be the kind of consistent, error-free athlete that we need him to be. So I think, you know, making any, I know it's great fun to do it on the peristyle and make kind of projections and depth charts and all that kind of thing. But, I think when you get right down to it, the players are going to decide that, and they're going to decide it by what they do, not what we say about them, you know, this many months ahead of time.
Yeah, good point, Dan. It depends on what they do. We can do a lot of talking, but that doesn't matter as much. Let's go Earl in West LA. He said USC has asked for NFL draft evaluations for 5 players, including Adoree Jackson and Juju Smith-Schuster. USC did not release the names of the other 3 players they asked to be evaluated. Any idea on who they might be?
Well, you'd have to think Damian Mama and Vianne Talamavayo. And we were all, you know, talking about that yesterday. I don't know. Chris Hawkins, what would you think? I mean, I don't know that there's anybody else exactly. I mean, I guess Nico technically could be in that position. Nobody else just jumped. You know, they're either seniors or they're sophomores, kind of, on this team.
Yeah.
With the players we've got. So went through that list, and I didn't see anybody that jumped out at me that said, okay, besides those guys we just named, I don't know. Could you come up with somebody else? I mean, that's 6. But
yeah, those were the names I was kind of thinking of. But, I'd have to go back and listen to what Clay Helton said as well, because did he said you can have up to 5. I don't remember. Did he say they put 5
no,
in?
No, he didn't. He did not say that they had, asked for 5. I mean, when we were talking to Adoree yesterday, he said, well, the coaches are want me to put my name in. They want me to get that information. He didn't even say that he asked for that.
Yeah.
And he basically said he's not going to make his decision based on that. Of course, he also said, mock draft? What's a mock draft?
Yeah.
Who does that? So, hey, Adoree wasn't going to go there. Adoree, he's really good. He's better than a lot of coaches at not answering, the questions he doesn't need to answer. I mean, Lane Kiffin should bring Adoree down and let Adoree teach him how to deal with the media. Because if Adoree didn't want to say, people obviously wanted to say, well, this mock draft says you're here, this mock draft says you're there. What do you think about that? And he didn't want to talk about that. And I don't blame him. I mean, if you say, what's a mock draft? You don't have to answer that question, because it's like, well, I don't even know what you're talking about.
Yeah.
And that's really good. I mean, he's so good at doing that. It's just pretty amazing. It's one of the reasons kids ought to think about, if you want to say, what's a good reason to come to USC? Well, all the other things that we know about, one of them is you really do get a chance to deal with the media, You get a chance to answer tough questions. You get a chance to learn to, you know, think on your feet. And it's just amazing the development you see of these kids. We were talking about Quentin Powell yesterday. What a, you know, breath of fresh air. What a delight he is, you know, as a fourth-year guy, you know, coming out of Florida. And his development, just the way he handles himself and with the press and all that, is just it's terrific. And it's just a great, you know, some great examples of some of the other things that, you know, coming to USC and getting to do that and on a daily or weekly basis is pretty special, I think.
For sure. Let's see. Kevin, no longer in South Orange County, wrote in, Dan. He said, what are your and Dan's thoughts on Michael Hutchings' future as a coach? I've watched his press conferences and recently saw a film study he did with Chris Hawkins for a TV deal, and he sure seemed to be on it. Very well thought out and detail-oriented. It didn't appear he'll have much of a future in the NFL. You think Clay keeps him on as a grad assistant? That's Kevin, who is no longer in South Orange County.
Okay. Well, Kevin, great point. If I were, you know, advising Clay, I would say hire him in a heartbeat. I just think he's terrific. The kids respect him. I mean, here's a kid that didn't really get a chance for a couple of years and then, you know, is resurrected by, you know, Clancy, who doesn't hold his size against him and figures out ways to use him and use his strength. And there were times over the last 2 years where we said, whenever they let him do something, he really does it. You know, whenever they played him or in practice, you'd say, wow. But he never really got the chance for those 2 years. He got the chance this year, and you realize all that, you know, De La Salle background and that intelligence and all the things he understands about the game come through. And I agree. It will be a reach for him. Probably in the NFL. Well, I wouldn't completely rule it out. He's sort, you know, he's just on the very edge, size-wise and, you know, athleticism-wise. If I were anybody who had a grad assistant position, he'd be at the top of the list. He's terrific. The kids respect him. He can say what needs to be said in ways in which you can see it gets through. To his teammates. So yeah, he's been a big plus, and a big plus, you know, for Clancy to recognize what he could do with Michael, and then for Michael to take advantage of that and become a real leader on that defense. It's been a terrific development for this team.
Certainly has. Yeah, he's a great kid too. So you hope him. I mean, I hope he has some success if he can go on the NFL. I'm glad he got to see the field this year and play a lot. We'll see what happens there, but I could definitely see him being a coach down the road. We have Mike. He said, I'd like to hear about Kenny Bigelow. Have you heard anything about Kenny's rehab? And do you see him starting on the defensive line next year? If not, who would start in his place? Thanks. Mike, class of 2002, currently in Connecticut. Brr, Mike. Sorry about that.
Mike. Okay. Yeah. Actually, Kenny's doing more and more. I mean, every week. I mean, he's at another level this week in terms of you know, he doesn't have the pads on, but he's got his, you know, he's in, you know, his gear, got his number 95. And we haven't asked him, but Kenny looks a whole lot bigger. I mean, Kenny slimmed down, trimmed down. Kenny looks to me like, he might be able to play anywhere on the line of scrimmage next year, but he's doing, you know, doing more lateral movements and, you know, just starts and stances and just a lot of stuff now that we, you know, we've seen him gradually move into it. You know, we've seen him start doing calisthenics where he'd be in line with everybody else and then working with the individual rehab guys. And then he's made a lot of progress, but, I'm going to ask him how big he is right now because he looks like he could certainly play inside, you know, next year with the guys coming back. That's obviously the place you're looking for somebody who can, step in for Stevie, who made such a difference and allowed, the other guys up front to play to their strengths. So Kenny might be that guy. I'm very encouraged with what I'm seeing. And skill wise, Kenny might be more, geared to being that plugger guy, that guy that occupies two or three people in the middle, that guy that they just can't run by. Now that he's gotten, the kind of bulk that he looks like he's bulked up to, that may be a better place for Kenny anyway. And I'm optimistic about Kenny.
We have Paul in Santa Clarita. He said, "Hello, Dan. Any truth to the rumor that there will likely be players transferring out of the program?" Thanks, Paul in Santa Clarita. And there's already been some. I mean, we know Noah Jefferson's mm-hmm. transferring and Max Brown is transferring. But anything else, Dan?
Yeah, well, EJ Price, I guess. So that's the three that we know about. And other than that, I mean, I thought Gerard did a great piece on, the rumors, Ya'Keli Ross. And it doesn't look like, those rumors. And it certainly looks like people just look around who was, maybe supposed to play more than they're playing. And you know what? I'll bet he might be transferring with, no connection, no nothing. Just throw it out there. And then somebody says, "Well, I saw it on another site." So is that, they're breathless almost, like, "Oh my gosh, is he going out of here?" And I think somebody posted the history of USC transfers or guys that moved on or, had problems. And of the last 10 years, it's like three guys maybe who actually went and hit a fairly good career. The history of transferring out, he hasn't been all that great. In terms of, especially when it's their own choice. And I think one of the things they're really selling to these kids is, for example, Isaac Whitney the other day tweeted about what a thrill it is for him to have completed his USC education, that he's going to have a USC degree, and how special that is for him. And, here's a kid that maybe didn't get the chance that he thought he might, and that his skills, there were so many guys at that position, and it just, coming in as a junior college kid, you're kind of behind people. But he understood that the best thing he's got is going to be his USC degree. And I think more of the kids are starting to understand, and Ya'Keli, I think, referenced that, I'm getting a great education. I'm going to have, great, connections and all of that. And, football is just, a part of that. And so, I wouldn't want to, right now say, any of these kids, that you think is gonna transfer. I don't know that it's obviously a better situation, if you transfer out. I mean, I just think, If it's EJ Price or Noah Jefferson, if there's just not a fit and it's just not the place for them, then absolutely you move on. And USC says, fine, we wish them well, because, even with their, obvious talents, it's just not the right place for them. And with Max, you want him to move on because you want him to get that chance to be in the right place and be able, after all that he's done for USC, you want him to be able to do that. But as far as those guys who, you say, well, he's not happy here, he's, I don't see that. And I wouldn't, come up with a name at this point, for the guy to do that. And USC, I do think, can make the case that you might be better off staying than going somewhere else and still maybe not making it work. There are some examples of that, right now, of guys who left USC and then went somewhere else, and now they're leaving that place and going somewhere else. And it's not, necessarily the best thing, to do. So I don't see anybody doing that right now. Doesn't mean there won't be, but it's not obvious that will happen.
We have Paul in Vegas who wrote in, Dan. He said, I haven't heard anybody make the observation that USC will have played three major conference champions this season. Off the top of your head, do you ever remember anyone else doing that? Before the season, we heard that ours was a tough schedule. Thanks, Paul in Las Vegas.
You're right, Paul. Nobody has made that observation. And as a result, probably nobody's checked that out. But, yeah, they've got the SEC champ, Alabama, and the Big Ten champ coming up, Penn State, and obviously the Pac-12 champ in Washington. And I doubt anybody – the other thing about the Pac-12, has anybody ever beaten both teams who are in the championship game and they're not in the championship game? I mean, it's just – you know, there's some of that stuff, crazy stuff happened in the Big Ten where you had the higher-ranked Ohio State and Michigan teams at the time were not in the championship game with Penn State and Wisconsin. I think these
And Michigan beat both of them, too. Dan, Michigan – yeah, Michigan did beat both of them, yeah.
Yeah, so I think the unbalanced schedules, for example, had Colorado, you know, who won the South, had they had to play Washington just as USC did, they wouldn't have won the South. I don't think there's anybody, you know, if they had to play Washington during the regular season. So, you know, they got a pass to some extent into the championship game because they – you know, USC played Washington, beat Washington. I mean, they obviously lost to two other teams. But I think conferences are going to have to figure out a way to make, you know, the championship a little more reflective of who's the best team. I mean, I don't think, is there anybody disagree that USC wasn't the best team in the Pac-12, you know, by the end of the year or the last 2 months or however long you want to go? And so... is there a way to make that more, you know, reflective of the reality? Although you go to the big, you know, the Big Ten, and it is hard to make the case that necessarily Penn State's the best team, but they did beat Ohio State. They did, you know, beat Wisconsin, and here they are. And yet they didn't make it into the playoffs, which sounds like what you read on the Penn State boards. Like, Wait a minute, you know, what are we doing on the outside looking in? They're lucky, obviously, they get to play another team pretty much in the same situation, or very similar situation, and the best bowl game of them all. So that makes them pretty happy. But that's a great observation about USC and the three conference champs.
And Earl in West LA wants to know, he said, am I correct in understanding there's going to be seven home games in 2017? And he lists Western Michigan, Texas, Stanford, Oregon State, Arizona, Utah, and UCLA.
It appears that that's the case. I guess the big question is, and we haven't had the Pac-12 schedule released yet, but, you know, if they follow form where USC plays Stanford in the, you know, first game of the Pac-12, which is beyond crazy. And I know they say that the Notre Dame flip-flop schedule for both teams requires that. But could USC possibly open it, you know, three straight home games with Western Michigan, then Stanford, then Texas, or however that works? And people are trying to say, wow, that's really odd if that happens. But nobody's come up with another scenario yet, but yeah, it'd be an interesting year. You know, if some things happen in the off season in terms of who comes back, they ought to sell a lot of season tickets. I mean, the difference between last year and this year. I mean, if you've got a team that a lot of people think will clearly be a top five or top four preseason team, a team that people are thinking going to go to the playoffs. You've got a Heisman Trophy candidate or two, depending on how, you know, the returnees from, you know, the NFL early decisions come down. You would have, if you were a U.S., you're in charge of selling tickets for USC football next year, you're probably in a pretty good place.
Yeah, you would, I think so. You hope so, right, I guess.
Right, and I guess P.J. Fleck is still going to be at Western Michigan.
Yeah.
Unless something happens. He said he only wants a Power 5 job, and right now I don't think there are any. There sure could be, obviously.
Yeah.
All I can say is Tennessee better beat Nebraska in their ball game. But if he's back at Western Michigan and they, I don't know what they're going to do in the Cotton Bowl, but if they win that, they'd have Alabama would have the longest win streaks in college football, and it would be interesting. USC was involved in Alabama's win streak last year as an opener, and they'd be involved in Western Michigan's win streak as an opener next year. So a lot of kind of interesting things that might happen in that schedule, and then they'll, get a chance to go against Tom Herman in Texas, and that ought to be interesting.
Yeah, for sure. There's a with big coaching change programs like Western Michigan and Texas, certainly it'll be fun. And Clay Helton will be, in a more stable place. So it'll be interesting to see how that goes next year. But we still want to talk about this year, of course. But that was
You talk about Clay Helton in a more stable place. I mean, here's a guy, he was basically fired in September, and he's one of the 10 finalists for the Bear Bryant Coach of the Year Award in December. I mean, that's like whoever has come back that fast, that far. James Franklin kind of almost made that same trip to Penn State. They were 2-2, but they lost they got just killed 49-10 by Michigan, so they had a similar Alabama game. And then they got beat by Pittsburgh, who, they haven't played Pittsburgh in a while, and Penn State people do not appreciate losing to Pittsburgh.
No.
So he had two real negatives on his September resume that had them kind of looking for, well, who's next? They were doing getting ready to do those, coaches hot board. And here, Franklin, one of the, Bear Bryant finalists also. I mean, it's just, it's a long season.
Yeah.
And if you do it right, it is kind of how you finish.
And the man who hired Clay Helton, we have a question about that, Dan. Earl in West LA again, he said, a year ago, people wanted to run Pat Hayden out of town on a rail because of his hiring practices. This podcast seriously questioned his ability to lead the athletic department. Today, no one is saying that. I think some people still are, Earl. But no one seems to be giving...
You're not listening to...
You're not listening.
Everybody.
No one seems to be giving him credit for the terrific coaches he hired during his tenure. I don't know how you say your first name. McAlpine just won an NCAA soccer title in his third season.
Yeah, that was a terrific hire. It was the obvious hire. I mean, he had done a great job at Washington State. I mean, and he was the coach of the year in the Pac-12. And if you're looking for a soccer coach, and the Washington State has a coach of the year, a young guy, smart guy, that's where you go. But Pat deserves credit for that hire. It was a terrific hire.
So he mentioned him. He said Dan Hubbs took baseball to the postseason in his fourth year. Andy Enfield took basketball to the NCAA tournament in his third year. Has them 9-0 right now, their best start since 1971. Carly Smith Gilbert has maintained track and field Olympic standards in spite of a 12 scholarship limit. And finally, Clay Helton has USC back in the Rose Bowl. And in the national conversation a year ago, he looked like a pariah. Now he looks more like a genius, don't you think? Earl in West LA.
I mean, you got to kind of balance things out. I mean, the baseball hirings, there was, there wasn't just one hire. There were a couple, and the previous one really didn't work out. So you got, there are positives and negatives there. I think that, track and field is a sensational hire. Wonderful job there. Andy, I think still the jury is still a little bit out. I mean, I think one of the issues is the fact that 6 of the 12 players eligible to come back this year decided not to come back and went other places. And that just nobody, even, around the team, it's just like nobody's sure exactly. There's a lot of transfer up to, 25% of college basketball player transfer, but 50% of your team. So it's not 100% in terms of all the hiring. And as far as football, this is the interesting one, because that's not how we understand that it went down. How we understand it went down is much more. I mean, Pat was looking at an NFL guy who, you know, still is not a head coach yet, but an ex-NFL guy. And from what we understand, the call was really Max's, that he got involved and said, you know, we're just not going to take any chances. We want a good person. We don't want somebody who, you know, I mean, you put your reputation on the line when you get involved in, you know, hiring, say, Steve Sarkisian. And everybody looks at that and says, wow, you know, that doesn't look good for USC. It doesn't look good for anybody involved in the hiring process. So I don't know that the hiring process was such that was Pat's hire. But that was the call, and Pat went along with it. And, so, you know, but from our reporting, that was not really Pat's hire.
And so, I, you know, and there's a lot of other,
take that for what it's worth.
Yeah, and there's a lot of other criticisms of Pat Hayden as well. I, you know, hated the way he handled the sanctions and all that kind of stuff. And as this McNair stuff rolls on, it just doesn't. It's not going to make USC look good in that light. There's a lot of. I mean, Pat Hayden's been a great Trojan. You know, there's so much positive things about Pat Hayden. I did not agree with a lot of the major decisions he made as the athletic director. I stand by just about everything I said on that. And I think, you know, Dan would probably feel the same way. But, you know, some of these other coaches are looking to be, you know, better off. We'll see. I mean, we still don't know, like with Andy Enfield, we don't know about Clay Helton too. I mean, there's a lot of factors that are going to be in place. Can he get back to a consistent, you know, win the South, win Rose Bowls, things like that? We'll see. But it's looking a lot more promising, obviously, on the football side.
And to be honest, if you can't hire good coaches at USC, you're not doing something right, because when you look at USC, I mean, just look at, you know, it's a top 25 academic school. You know, they just basically raised the $6 billion, the most money of any school in American higher education in one drive. You know, this campus, once, you know, especially once they get the, you know, the village, University Village online next year, I mean, where it's located and, you know, you almost can't beat it. And then you got the history. You know, there are different ways you can count NCAA championships or national championships. And USC's right there with, you know, with obviously with UCLA and Stanford, but USC's got the, you know, the football, championships that the others don't have. And USC's been there for such a long time and has, you know, the most, first-round draft picks and Hall of Famers and overall NFL draft picks. And there's so much. USC's got the greatest record overall in the history of the NCAA in baseball and track and field. I mean, you know, if you're recruiting a golfer for USC, you say, well, I just throw this in. You will have a membership at Riviera Country Club. Oh, really? Huh. I get to play at Riviera every day? Yeah. Yes, he's got a lot going for it. I mean, you really ought to be able to go out and hire the best coaches. And so as much as you want to get credit for that, it's not like something that, say, separates you from, the field if you've got some things that really were negative and didn't work out. And there were enough of those to, you know, make it a mixed bag. So I wouldn't want to try to push it and say, you know, everything has turned around and now everybody sees this differently. I don't think that's the case. I wouldn't try to overdo that case. I would just say it is what it is. There were good things and there were bad things. And now somebody else is doing that job who we really haven't heard from much yet in terms of, he's been very quiet behind the scenes, Lynn Swann. It'd be interesting to see when we start seeing some real indications of where Lynn Swann is going, because the program, in terms of, I think the biggest issues are going to be the Coliseum redevelopment. I mean, that's something's got to be done there, and changing the direction, and the whole relationship with the Pac-12, with a Pac-12 whose leadership has completely lost its way in terms of television, in terms of the Pac-12 networks, in terms of scheduling, and so many things that looked like they were going in the right direction 5 years ago, and have just completely taken the Pac-12 to the bottom of the barrel in so many of the ways that other conferences have gone past them, and with no indication that they're going to figure it out. So I think there's some big things on Lynn Swann's plate. It's going to be interesting to see how he handles them. But so far, we don't really have an indication of how that's going.
We got a couple more, and then we'll let you go, Dan. Joseph in Monterey says, greetings, happy holidays to the team at USCFootball.com. This is a random question for Dan and yourself. Here it goes. There's a lot of talk about how boosters are affecting the hirings and firings at universities, specifically when it comes to buyouts. The devil is in the details, though. Do schools from contractual agreements with boosters say that if Coach X is hired for this amount, you will pay Y amount of dollars towards his salary? I imagine there's no way to know with USC and the private school status, but is this common in public schools, or is it often as simple as University of Texas, for example, the president of the school saying, if we lure Tom Herman and fire Charlie Strong, then we expect a donation of this much money, Y dollars. And part two of the question is, who are some of the noteworthy sports boosters of USC who maintain a strong voice? Are there any that are public about it? Thanks again. Fight on. Beat the Nittany Lions. My dad's a season ticket holder for Penn State, so I'll proudly be the Trojan horse wearing a USC gear in that whiteout section. He shouldn't have had a son graduate from USC. Cheers, Joseph in Monterey.
Good question, Joseph. I think it really depends on the schools and the boosters. I mean, I think, for example, in the recent Lane Kiffin to Houston situation, I think it became a standoff between the fairly well-known chairman of the board at Houston, who's got a TV show and a wealthy guy, a restaurateur, and a chain of restaurants and what have you. And I think it did, to some extent, come down over the buyout. I mean, I think he decided we are not going to get caught with a guy like Tom Herman comes in 2 years and then leaves after getting everybody excited. And my understanding was they were asking if they were going to give Lane a 5-year, deal for, let's say, and this is the other thing. They had gone from, I don't know, much over $1 million to $3 million for Herman. And so if they were going to give Lane a 5-year deal at $3 million a year, they were going to say, we want a $15 million buyout. If you leave after year one, you got to pay us $12 million back. And prorate it based on the remaining amount of the contract. I think it was a deal breaker, but I think it became, you ended up having the chairman of the board negotiating with the coach and his agent. And so that was pretty, and he was public about it. Where he didn't exactly say it went to that place, but he was public about, kind of his role. And things at Texas, I think it's just like Texas and Texas A&M. It's kind of understood that from their big boosters that money will be there. Although like Texas has so much money, I'm not even sure that's always an issue with a school like Texas with the amount of revenue they generate. It's just they know that's going to be there. Although I think schools are finally, they've done a lot of dumb things in extending coaches. I mean, obviously, like last year, Kentucky probably would have let go Mark Stoops, except for the fact he had like a $15 million buyout. I mean, so guaranteed contracts. So it was going to cost them $15 million to let their football coach, who was like 4-22 in the SEC, go. So, he had a halfway decent year this year, so maybe they got lucky. But I think schools are realizing that the agents for these coaches have done a much better job in negotiating than the ADs at the schools who aren't really. I mean, you know, if you've got guys who've got all these top coaches all over the country, they're so much more equipped to do the negotiating for them than each individual athletic director. So I think finally there's been enough publicity that the athletic directors have realized we have to do something. And getting a big buyout, in terms of what it would cost a coach if he leaves on his, because it was like always a one-way street. The coach was protected if you fired him, but the school wasn't very well protected if the coach left. And now I think that's coming back to a more even place. As far as USC, I think it's no secret he was at practice the other day, and you know he's donated the great practice field that USC has, the Brian Kennedy, a longtime, booster. And I know during the NCAA stuff, and it was always ridiculous because none of the NCAA stuff had anything to do with any USC booster whatsoever. But they paid the penalty. You know, they couldn't go on the trips with the team and all that kind of stuff that they, you know, had been part of the situation. And so but it's great to see somebody like Brian Kennedy back and involved. He was there with Jim Hardy, the great 93-year-old former USC and Rams quarterback. And it just guys like that, do a lot. And if you're one of those people, you very often have a fairly strong opinion about how things are going. And there are stories about Brian at football banquets that Brian tells himself that I won't repeat here, but he's not afraid to say what he thinks, and I think he has nothing but USC's best interests at heart. I think one of the other people who has always been identified with USC athletics is Wayne Hughes, the public storage, he's an alum like Brian, the public storage billionaire who has, had USC's best interests, I think, always at heart and has always been there to kind of, when USC, needs somebody to be there. I don't know if you saw the O.J. Simpson documentary, but I always remember this, that they used all the real, things that everybody said. And O.J. Coming back to L.A. in the Bronco was on the phone with, I think, Robert Kardashian, another USC graduate. And he says to Robert Kardashian, this is when you're not sure if O.J. is going to shoot himself or not, says, make sure you say goodbye to Wayne Hughes. So, you have people like that that have been identified with the program, for a long time. And, but I don't think they don't call the shots at all. That's the interesting thing, I think, at USC. They're really not, they're there to support, or if you ask their opinion or whatever. But it wouldn't probably be where you'd have any of them negotiating anything. And technically, you're not supposed to do that anywhere in the country. But I think there are a lot of programs. I was at, when I covered Kentucky, Kentucky basketball, they actually still allowed the media to go into the locker room, which is unbelievable. But we only got to go in second. The first group that went into the locker room were the boosters. So they'd open up the locker room, and here come the boosters. Then, a little bit later, they'd let the media in. And it was kind of amazing because sometimes the kids would still have the money rolled up in their hands, or they'd be counting it. As you come in, the players are, It was, you've never seen anything like that at USC, and you're not gonna. I mean, it's just, it's a good question.
It is a good question. we got one more for you, Dan. It's our buddy Nick from Cyprus. He said, my question is simple. I think it breaks the unwritten rule on the Peristyle podcast. It's about basketball. What do you think of the season so far, besides the obvious that we are undefeated? From how we have been given no love in the top 25 rankings. Well, now that is. I think this was from last week. Winning with injuries, not playing without our best, not playing our best basketball games, big road wins, the coaching staff, etc. I trust your opinion on basketball, considering I'm not mistaken. You covered Kentucky basketball, which is the equivalent to our football program, where you can't BS those fans like you can BS, like you can't BS us. Fight on, love what you guys do. That's Nick.
Yeah, it is. I think I was lucky. I covered U.S. when I started covering USC football. I also covered UCLA basketball, and that was like I got to, you know, the three straight Final Four teams and all that talent. You know, Russell Westbrook and Kevin Love, and you know, 15 guys that went on to the NBA. So I got to do both of those. I think I'm the only person that covered both the UCLA basketball beat and the Kentucky basketball beat. So that was fun, and we used to kid about that because the UCLA people talked about, oh, how much pressure there was, and you would talk to the, you know, you realize, you try to tell them, no, there's nothing even close to the pressure on UK basketball, and you know, they may have the perfect guy to, they hit Patino and then Calipari, they may have the perfect guys who have egos that are big enough to deal with that, but as far as USC, I think they've done it. I mean, I think the win at Texas A&M showed me that they've grown up a lot, and you know, they were athletic enough to run by the, you know, a big Texas A&M team that had people thinking that, you know, they could be the second best team in the SEC. SMU, I think people thought they were going to be a little bit better than they've turned out to be, but for the USC to be able to handle the loss of Benny Boatwright for, you know, the 6 weeks, and play athletic enough. I mean, I probably would still like to see them play less half-court basketball and more full-court, just run the court, because they've got great athletes. The more they get into their transition game, the more they get those open three-pointers. And they got kids, you know, on a number of spots that can knock the three-pointers down. And, you know, they've got people who are athletic enough to beat you down the floor. I think one of the reasons, and I looked at the, you know, USC finally gets into the top 25, and you say, wow, that's great. And you looked at the other teams that are in that 21 to 25, the bottom five of the rankings, and you saw Notre Dame, who's lost just one game and played the heck out of Villanova the other day, and Florida State, who's lost just one game and beat Florida the other, and I'm thinking, who else is in there? Cincinnati, who lost two games, and I can't think of the fifth team, but those teams are good. Now, I'm not sure, you know, all of those might also have the same kind of gripe, like, man, what do we have to do to get noticed? But they certainly should have been ranked, and now they are ranked. I think one thing that's hurt USC and put them under the radar this year is UCLA getting that great freshman group that they've got, and a UCLA team that they beat three, four times last year, and now they've got Lonzo Ball and TJ Leaf, and they're really, really, really good basketball team. So I think USC, you know, obviously the two teams in LA are what, 18-0 now or something like that, and that's kind of unheard of. I think they're only six unbeaten teams in America, and two of them are in LA, and USC just happens to be the other team. But I'm really looking forward to those UCLA games, because the way UCLA likes to run the floor and the way USC has to run the floor, those games, I mean, I'd get your tickets the first time they play is at Galen, and I'd get your tickets now. I don't know if Benny Boatwright will be back for that game or not, but those are going to be exciting. That'll be fun. And that's all I think right now. Just if they play their best, you know, basketball, don't slow the game down. Don't try to play the other team the way the other team wants to play it. Push the ball up the floor, and be more athletic. I think they've got a chance. When you look at the way the Pac-12 is playing out in this preseason, Oregon, with Dylan Brooks' injury, hasn't been quite the team that they thought they would be, and the rest of the Pac-12. Looks a little plodding, a little non-athletic, you know, with some bigger guys, but maybe not the athletes USC has. So I'm fairly encouraged. I know people at the beginning of the year, Joe Lunardi, for example, ESPN bracketologist, was not including USC in his NCAA bracket. And I think that'll be revised, obviously, at this point. I mean, I think I in a war room about a month ago, I picked them to go 11-2 in the preseason before the Pac-12 started, and everybody thought I was crazy. I mean, what are you, 11-2? I may have really undershot it at this point. You know, they got a chance to win them all. And how about that? That'd be pretty neat.
Pretty crazy. All right. Well, Dan, great stuff. Thanks for coming on, sharing your insights. I know one more practice this week, and then we'll be back at it again next week. So thanks again.
Okay, enjoyed it. And we'll try to stay dry today. This is going to be an interesting afternoon.
Yeah, hopefully it's dry for you. But that's Dan Weber. Does a great job for us at uscfootball.com. I'm your host, Ryan Abraham. Hope you guys enjoyed this episode of the Peristyle Podcast. And we will talk to you next time.
You've been listening to the Peristyle Podcast, presented by uscfootball.com. Be sure to tune in next week for the latest news on Trojan football and recruiting. And don't forget, you can automatically download the podcast directly to your smartphone or tablet for free. Just click the iTunes link on peristylepodcast.com or search for Peristyle Podcast at the iTunes Music Store.